From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, the 28th of August, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get this thing officially started with
the Daily Denogram.
Oh, we got a good one here for you. Some of the world's greatest feats were accomplished by people not smart enough to know they were impossible. Yeah, and you know, the Guinness Book has a list of their names and their accomplishments.
What a performance.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, boy.
Some cool, some not so cool.
I'm excited.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Keith, there you go, man. Oh, come on. Who are you fooling? That's not going to happen. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1898, Caleb Bradham renamed his carbonated soft drink Pepsi Cola. Good move, too, because he found out that no one was walking into the stores and asking for a bottle of Caleb Bradham. Hey, hand me a bottle of that diet Caleb Bradham, would you? Well, it was on this day in 1999, Philip Glass Symphony No. 5, Requiem Bardot Nirmanakaya for chorus and orchestra, premiered at the Salzburg Festival led by Dennis Russell Davies in Salzburg, Austria. Now, if by some off chance you're not familiar with Philip Glass, look up the music soundtrack to the movie Koyaanisqatsi. Listen to it in its entirety and then get back with me. I'd love to hear your reaction.
What type of program is that?
The last several days have been very, very good for the Trump people. And we are everywhere, right? I mean, the other day you had RFK Jr. endorsing Donald Trump. And then right on the heels of that, you had Tulsi Gabbard endorsing Donald Trump. That's an endorsement right there that holds a lot of water, Tulsi Gabbard. Because I look at Tulsi Gabbard as probably the single most honest and most credible person in the political universe these days. And I mean this even on a worldwide basis, not just in this country, but all over the world. I think Tulsi Gabbard is the most credible person who's got a very good platform for spreading her opinions and her philosophy, which is excellent. A lot of interesting things happening, and it's good for Donald Trump. And now here's another one. Although I don't think the intention behind this was to benefit Donald Trump, but rather to save his own butt. And I'm talking about Mark Zuckerberg, you know, the weird looking dude from Meta or Facebook. But it represents a very interesting kink in the political platform or the political universe these days. And that is, he admitted, came right out and admitted that the Biden administration did pressure him, his organization, Meta/Facebook, into censoring certain material. Well, now apparently he regrets succumbing to the pressure from the government. And on the one hand, you might ask, gee, are we really entering a new era? I'm not so sure. I mean, you have to wonder, why is Mark Zuckerberg suddenly coming out? Does he? Well, here's a conspiracy theory on my part. Okay. Is it possible that Zuckerberg can see that Donald Trump is probably going to win? And that maybe he, Zuckerberg, may end up facing some consequences. I don't know why he should be afraid of that, but you never know. I mean, I don't know much about the guy. Neither does anybody else. But now he's going on the record admitting that the Biden administration pressured him to censor Trump. And in a letter to the GOP-led House Judiciary Committee, Zuckerberg revealed, so I guess you could say this is an official communication, he revealed that the Biden-Harris administration pressured Meta to censor COVID-19. Then again, we already knew that. But he's making it official, and I guess that's important. I shouldn't denigrate that. So is he no longer being blackmailed? And, you know, is this just a tactic to maybe jump a sinking ship that is the Democrat Party? I mean, think about this. It's looking more and more every day like Donald Trump is going to win. That damn the polls. The polls are saying that this is a neck and neck race, which I find hard to believe. But there's something else I find hard to believe, and that is the sheer number of people who seem to support Kamala Harris. Although when she shows up personally somewhere, she doesn't draw nearly the crowds that Donald Trump draws. So there's a story behind there we're still not privy to. But a fellow by the name of Brandon of the R2R Network tweeted, Zuckerberg admitting that the U.S. government played a significant role in pressuring Facebook to censor COVID-19-related content on its platform. Jiu-jitsu, wakeboarding with an American flag, shilling Donald Trump, and now soft whistleblowing. Is Zuck waking up? Maybe he is. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt for just a minute. Maybe Zuck is waking up. I mean, didn't he make a comment after Donald Trump was shot? I thought he made a favorable comment there. And that it kind of stunned him that the man just put his fist in the air and said, fight, fight, fight. I mean, you have to admit, that's pretty darn impressive. But there's a part of me, it's the skeptic in me, that says, nah, I'm thinking more like Zuckerberg is trying to save his own hide. So let's go to the official release from the Daily Wire. Now, here's a publication I trust. Daily Wire reported, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg said in a letter on Monday that the Biden-Harris administration repeatedly pressured his company, which includes Facebook, Instagram, Messenger, WhatsApp, and more, to censor content that's protected free speech. Zuckerberg made the admission in a letter to House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan this week, in which he said that his goal moving forward was to be neutral and not play a role one way or another for either political party or ideology. He said he doesn't even want the appearance of playing a role and will not be making political contributions. Now, that part is big. That is very big. Not making any political contributions. Maybe he's just admiring Elon Musk. Could that be? Maybe he's just doing a copycat of Elon Musk. But I think Elon Musk is going to be making financial contributions. Anyhow, getting back to the way that Daily Wire reported this, they say in 2021, senior officials from the Biden administration, including the White House, repeatedly pressured our teams for months to censor certain COVID-19 content, including humor and satire, and expressed a lot of frustration with our teams when we didn't agree. This is all out of Zuckerberg's letter. Ultimately, it was our decision whether or not to take content down, and we own our decisions, including COVID-19-related changes we made to our enforcement in the wake of this pressure. I believe the government pressure was wrong, and I regret that we were not more outspoken about it. I also think we made some choices that, with the benefit of hindsight and new information, we wouldn't make today. Like I said to our teams at the time, I feel strongly that we should not compromise our content standards due to pressure from any administration in either direction. And we're ready to push back if something like this happens again. So there you go. Maybe Zuck is looking to the future. Maybe Zuck is expecting to get pressure from the Trump administration. That could be it, too. But Robbie Starbuck, you know him, he tweeted, Mark Zuckerberg says that it's hard not to get emotional about the spirit Trump showed getting up and pumping his fist with the American flag behind him after being shot. He says it's one of the most badass things I've ever seen. Okay, that's That was Zuckerberg. And I remembered that, but yeah, you know, geez, I can't remember every darn thing. But there was a video. There was a video on X,
formerly known as Twitter,
where Zuckerberg called Trump badass, and he stopped short of endorsing Trump. So, but this is an interesting wrinkle in the political atmosphere right now. We need to take note of this. You would have to have been living under a rock if in recent years you didn't know, or at least sense, that big tech's influence over media and elections have escalated. And Google, right there, is in the forefront of it all. They found themselves at the center of this controversy, big time. Recent article from the Washington Examiner, another publication that I trust, highlights the relationship, a troubling relationship between Google, the Democrat Party, and the media. And we've sensed that it's been there. We've sensed this for quite some time. But now it's coming out into the open, a little more at least. And it's a relationship that poses risk, big risks, to journalistic integrity and our elections, the democratic process. Now, the issue came to light with the proposed California Journalism Preservation Act. And it originally was aimed to support local journalism by allowing publishers to negotiate, collectively negotiate with tech giants like Google and Meta. But this legislation was thwarted by some pretty intense lobbying from Google, which resulted in a new, more insidious arrangement. Now, knowing Google the way we all do, this shouldn't be too surprising, but you need to know the grisly details, okay? So, under this new deal, Google and Meta agreed to provide $55 million each over 5 years to the University of California, Berkeley, which, of course, is the epicenter of far-left liberalism. Now, the university would then take this money and use it as grants to local news organizations, particularly those in news deserts or serving underserved communities. Now, I would take this to mean struggling commercial newspapers, okay? These are not nonprofit organizations that they're distributing this money to. And while this might appear to be a benevolent gesture in some circles, critics, of course, are arguing that this effectively transforms these grants into a slush fund. And it's a fund controlled by left-leaning academics with the purpose of bolstering media outlets that align with Democrat Party values, assuming the Democrat Party still has values. Now, this arrangement not only undermines the original intent of supporting independent journalism, the intent, remember, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, but this also entrenches the influence of big tech and the Democrat Party over the press. I mean, don't you think that both already have enough influence over the media? Well, apparently they don't think they have enough. And Gavin Newsom, governor out there in California, actually praised the deal, which is no surprise. He was claiming it was going to help rebuild a robust and dynamic press corps in the state. Really? But Republicans and media watchdogs are warning that this is a dangerous consolidation of power, one that threatens to turn the press into a mere mouthpiece for Democrat agendas. Now, naturally, this is illegal, but you see, California is trying to make it legal. And then it has to be challenged by the rest of the country, or a good portion of the rest of the country, and then put before the Supreme Court, which could take years. And the damage that could be done in those years is just immeasurable. So, as the Washington Examiner reported, this deal represents a cartel. And it's a cartel that further diminishes the already dwindling independence of American journalism. This is nothing short of frightening. Now, beyond this, Google's involvement in elections has already drawn scrutiny up to this point on a number of occasions. Reports, for instance, indicate that Google interfered in U.S. elections at least 41 times since 2008. And one of the ways that this influence manifests itself is in censoring conservative voices while boosting liberal candidates. And I'll give you a free example. During the 2016 presidential election, Google was accused of manipulating search algorithms to favor Hillary Clinton. Now, you can see this on display today. Think of a conservative topic. Google that topic into the Google bar and see what sources, what reference sources come up. You will not see a single conservative news source. Fox News Channel, very successful news organization, never comes up on Google. Never. Don't you find that a little odd? No, it's not a little odd. It's a lot odd. So I don't use Google as my search engine anymore. I just don't. And this pattern of behavior has persisted with Google continuing to exert its influence over electoral outcomes. And almost exclusively in favor of Democrat candidates. So the implications of this BS are, you know, I guess if I use the word profound, that's an understatement. Google's control over the digital advertising market and Google's ability to manipulate search results give it unbelievable power to shape public discourse and influence elections. A federal court recently ruled that Google violated antitrust laws by maintaining a monopoly in the online research market, and thereby reinforcing concerns that the company's dominance is not only harmful to competition, but also to democracy itself. You've got to sit up and take notice. And we have to demand better. I mean, this alliance between big tech and the Democrat Party is more than just a political convenience. It's a concerted effort to control the flow of information in America. And with California Republicans unlikely to dismantle this powerful Google Meta Democrat Party cartel, there's a pretty urgent need for conservatives to push for federal legislation like the Journalism Competition and Preservation Act. Now, that would help restore balance to the media landscape. You know, as the 2024 elections approach, I mean, we're even less than a couple of months away now. The influence of big tech on the Democrat process can't be overstated. The ongoing collaboration between Google and the Democrat Party, blatant as it is, should serve as a stark reminder of the sheer danger we're living under, posed by the concentration of media power. And you've seen how the mainstream media has been behaving ever since Kamala Harris, who was the butt of everybody's jokes until she became the official candidate for president. Well, now the mainstream media is whitewashing her track record. That, too, is extremely blatant. You would have to be brain dead not to be able to see this. And this is the danger posed by the concentration of media power in the hands of a few. And there's an incredible need for robust legal and regulatory frameworks to protect the integrity of American democracy. Because if we don't do something about it now, we will never have the chance again. Securing the endorsement of RFK Jr. on the part of Donald Trump was a big, big deal. But an even bigger deal was securing the endorsement of Tulsi Gabbard, who joined President Trump Monday morning at Arlington National Cemetery to remember the servicemen and women who died in the Kabul airport bombing 3 years ago. And then she took things a step further by joining Trump at the National Guard Association event in Michigan. And this is where she shared her endorsement of Trump.
Thank you, Mr. President. Aloha. I know we got Hawaii in the house here. There we go. It is a privilege to be here with all of you, my brothers and sisters in uniform, especially on this day of all days. I had the privilege of joining President Trump this morning at Arlington Cemetery, where he joined two Gold Star families and loved ones of Staff Sergeant Hoover and Sergeant G, both of whom were two of the 13 killed in the Abbey Gate attack 3 years ago today in Kabul. And I can tell you, as we were there, as he laid a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier, joining these Marines' loved ones, I felt the sorrow that he shared with them in their loss. I felt and saw his sincere appreciation for these servicemen and women who paid the ultimate price, and their loved ones who continue to grieve to this day. This is personal for me, as I know it is for so many of you here. This is real. It's not just words. I first deployed to Iraq in 2005 with the Hawaii Army National Guard as a member of Charlie Med. As those of you who were deployed during that time know, it was the height of the war, and sadly, we took many casualties. And every day we were confronted with that high human cost of war and that sadness as we boarded the plane when we left, that we were leaving some of our brothers and sisters behind, only to lose others when we got home to suicide. So I mean what I say when I share with you that I know that President Trump understands the grave responsibility that a president and commander-in-chief bears for every single one of our lives. Whether you're a soldier, you're an airman, a Marine, sailor, or a Coastie, he keeps us in his heart in the decisions that he makes. We saw this through his first term in the presidency, when he not only didn't start any new wars, he took action to de-escalate and prevent wars. He exercised the courage that we expect from our commander-in-chief in exhausting all measures of diplomacy, having the courage to meet with adversaries, dictators, allies, and partners alike in the pursuit of peace, seeing war as a last resort. The truth is, as we head towards our decision as a country in November, the same cannot be said about Kamala Harris. In fact, the opposite is true, and we're living through this reality today as this administration has us facing multiple wars on multiple fronts in regions around the world and closer to the brink of nuclear war than we ever have been before. This is one of the main reasons why I'm committed to doing all that I can to send President Trump back to the White House, where he can once again serve us as our commander-in-chief. Because I am confident that his first task will be to do the work to walk us back from the brink of war. We cannot be prosperous unless we are at peace. And we can't live free as long as we have a government that is retaliating against its political opponents and undermining our civil liberties, weaponizing our very institutions against those they deem as a threat. Kamala Harris has done this over the last 3.5 years. She won't hesitate to continue that if she is elected as president. President Trump has been their first and foremost target in this because they don't want us as voters to even have the option to vote for him. I've been their most recent target, added to a secret domestic terror watch list after exposing the truth about what kind of dangers we would face if Kamala Harris is elected as president. We as Americans must stand together to reject this anti-freedom culture of political retaliation and abuse of power. We can't allow our country to be destroyed by politicians who will put their own power ahead of the interests of the American people, our freedom, and our future. I am proud to stand here before you today, whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent. If you love our country, as I do, if you cherish peace and freedom as we do, I invite you to join me in doing all that we can to save our country and elect President Donald J. Trump and send him back to the White House to do the tough work of saving our country and serving the people. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
You know, I got to be honest, I feel nothing but love and admiration for this woman, Tulsi Gabbard. She is a goddess. She's a great American. And I can't think of too many people who could follow in her footsteps. I hope that at some point in the future, she indeed runs again for president. I mean, there's no doubting the sincerity of this woman. She's in this for all the right reasons. And you look at her background. I believe she lives here in Texas now. She's married to a non-commissioned officer and or a former non-commissioned officer. She's a lieutenant colonel herself, you know, in the Army National Guard. So there's no doubting, really, the sincerity of this lady. She truly loves the country. I'd love to hear the story behind that. How did she get here? You know, I mean, I understand her political story, that her political history is very interesting, too, because she started out as a Democrat. She was a Democrat candidate for president when she was in the primaries. And we all know how that turned out. She's now an independent. She is not a Republican, but she's not a Democrat. Oh, boy. Fred Klett is back.
Scientists are making stuff up. In the newspaper, scientists said they discovered a black hole in the galaxy M87, 50 million light years away. That's what they said. They discovered a black hole in the galaxy M87, which I'm pretty sure is between M88 and M86. 50 million light years away. That's how far away they said it was. 50 million light years. Light years. Light years! Well, you know what? I am sick and tired of acting like I know how far a light year is. I have no idea. Is it farther than a mile? But they're more than happy to tell us. Scientists said a light year is a distance light travels. Light travels. I've never even seen it peck. They said a light year is a distance light travels in 1 year, which is approximately 6 trillion miles. 6 trillion miles. Trillion! There's a number I use my checking account every day. So 50 million times 6 trillion. Way over 100! So now we know how far to go, we know in which direction, just follow the numbers in the sky, and there it is, a black hole. Of course, we all know what that is, don't we? We have no idea. But scientists are more than happy to tell us. Scientists said a black hole is a supernova or giant star that is so large it collapses onto itself and is so dense, the gravity is so powerful that even light can't escape. That's what the scientists said, even light can't escape. And this is where we've got them. They're making stuff up. Even light can't escape. Because you know what they said that means? You can't see it. Oh, no, you should all be with me at this point. You can't see it, but we discovered it. 50 million light years away. If you can discover something right next to you, you can't see. That's pretty good. Oh, I think I got a black hole right here. It even gets better. How do we discover it? We use the Hubble telescope to discover a black hole that you can't see. I would have loved to have been with the scientists when they got those pictures from the Hubble. You know what? I can't see anything. Let's just tell them it's a black hole. A British scientist. What?
Make it another great day in your life. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower, and you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.